My apologies to those of you who have been sitting here, but we have little power to change what happens on the floor of the House. We do have the power to change our agenda, and we will do that, moving Senate Bill 857A up to the top of the list, and we will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 857A, and we're waiting for Senator Verger. So I'll just make a quick announcement to those folks who are here to testify on 857A. We'll be asking elected officials to testify first, although I think we're going to have a brief presentation by State Lands first. Then we'll have the elected officials. That will be followed by those of you who have traveled over 100 miles to be here today. Those who represent similar positions will be called forward in panels of three. Each speaker is limited to a maximum of 3 minutes. If you have written testimony, no oral testimony will be taken. This committee intends to allow both presentations on this issue to be fairly represented. For the sake of saving time, we ask that you try not to duplicate the testimony of others, but when you do testify, start by giving your name and address and identify your position on the bill. There will be no vote on this bill today. The committee will use today's public hearing for information gathering only. Okay, we appreciate that. And if we could have the Bureau of State Lands come forward to give their presentation, and then as soon as Senator Verger gets here, we'll have her. Speak of the devil. I'll ask State Lands to wait for a moment while we bring forth Senator Verger. If you'd come forward, please. We just stopped everything for you, Joanne.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman.
Good afternoon and welcome.
And members of the committee, I am Joanne Verger. I'm a state senator from Senate District 5, and I'm here today in support of Senate Bill 857. The South Sea Reserve was the first estuary in the nation. It was established in 1974. Since then, we have 26. The reserve has brought in $13 million in federal funds, but I believe that today it can be the key element in economic development of the Charleston area and bringing in other money into that area. The reserve is managed, Mr. Chairman, by a board, and this is a very important part of this hearing. It is managed by a board that represents schools, county commissioners, Port of Coos Bay, Department of State Lands, interested marine groups, and a person from the general public. This board approves all policy of the reserve. Finding that there had been no boundaries drawn for the east-west of the reserve, I felt that the reserve needed those boundaries designated. And so, in Senate Bill 857, which calls for an expansion of the boundaries, you will also note that there are boundaries on the east and west. Senate Bill 857 doesn't do anything that changes the statute that's been in place for 30 years, except for these boundary changes. Mr. Chairman, you'll see before you today, or should see before you today, amendments. These amendments followed a meeting in Charleston that I had with over 100 people, business owners, property owners, also conversations with the Port of Coos Bay. These amendments came following suggestions by people at the Charleston meeting. We are pleased to make these accommodations. We support the amendments. This bill encourages the partnership of the merchants in Charleston with the reserve. Ecotourism is the fastest growing vacation style in the United States. If the property south of the Charleston Bridge could be purchased by the reserve with their property acquisition funds, which is money that has been given to them through inheritance. No taxpayer money, not a dollar. Nor funds that is National Oceanic and Atmospheric Association. Nor funds could be used to build the Tourist Information Center manned by both the Charleston Merchants and the Reserve. This project is known as the Gateway Project and could increase the visitor count above the 20,000 that they had last year. This has little chance of happening without Senate Bill 857. The Merchants Association partnered with the Reserve in a study to look at the viability of the Gateway Project. At this time, there is no new agreement for them to move forward. Some merchants oppose moving forward. Some strongly support the Gateway Project. Mr. Chairman, Charleston's future is going to be and should be left to the people who live there. At the end of the day, that's the way it is. But we are responsible for setting good public policy. And then when that policy is forwarded, it is either enhanced by local people or it is not. You may hear some opposition. You will hear some opposition. I do not want to address any opposition that is personal. I want to, however, talk a little bit about two things. One is the opposition that says we should not take property off of the tax rolls. Private land should never go to state or federal government. The taxes from the last willing seller, who, by the way, was not able to sell because this was not put into effect. So if you believe in property rights, this willing seller didn't have that property right. He bought and paid for the property, but he was unable to sell because his land was not included in the reserve. The county bought private land, Mr. Chair, for a park north of Coos Bay. They took 134 acres off of the tax rolls. The assessed value was $596,032. The county lost $1,279.82 in taxes. I strongly supported the purchase of that land for the park. It was a wonderful thing to do. Opposition also, Mr. Chair, might be about the management of the reserve. Let me go back to the board members that I told you about. They are a representative board of many different groups in the community. And so that process is set there for those who have complaints. The board has the total authority of the management of that board and of the staff of the reserve. And so the process is there to go through to correct anything that they would like as far as the staff or the attitude of the reserve. So for those who like to hunt and hike and fish and clam and picnic and ride horses and pick berries for their own private use, and for those who see a vision for the wonderful economic development of Charleston through the partnership of the merchants and the reserve, I would ask you to support Senate Bill 857. In closing, let me say that the Southsville Reserve is widely supported, according to my mail, by many residents in Coos County, including people of many, many political persuasions. I have focused a great deal of time and effort in the last 3 weeks to address the concerns of what I consider to be a smaller group, and I have been happy to do so. I cannot build trust, but I can make decisions based on fact. And I believe with all my heart that the Gateway Project is a vital economic project for that area of the South Coast. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to, in essence of time now, introduce Mike Braidwell, the Director of the Reserve, for a presentation so that you can see visually what the Southsville Reserve is all about.
Thank you, Senator. Any questions for the Senator?
Thank you very much.
We miss you in the House.
Thank you. Senator Berger, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. My name is Michael Graybill. I'm the manager of the South Slough National Estuarine Research Reserve in Charleston, that is the subject of the three pieces of legislation that you're hearing scheduled today. Senator Verger has asked me to give you an overview of the objectives of our program, which I hope to do for you now. An estuary is a coastal phenomena that is a transition zone between a river and the sea. It's an area that shares characteristics of the ocean and of the rivers that feed it. At the mouth of every river or water body that flows into the Pacific Ocean in Oregon, you will find an estuary. Oftentimes the term estuary and bay are used interchangeably. If you think of the types of rivers that feed into our coastline in our state, you'll see there's a great variety. Some of them are dominated by freshwater flows from the river, for example, the Columbia River. Some are smaller systems that don't have large streams associated with them, and ocean processes build a sandbar and create an embayment. Others represent the shape that results from when the sea level rose and flooded into the land over the last 15,000 years or so. And finally, some of the very small estuaries actually have sandbars that build right across the mouth of them, so that at certain times of the year there's no surface water linkage between the stream and the ocean, that the fresh water moves out through the sand along the beach. The South Slough Reserve is a 5,000-acre research natural area that's located on the southern, one of the southern inlets of Coos Bay or the Coos Estuary. It's the only site of its kind in Oregon. It was created by an act of the Oregon Legislature in 1974 to establish a long-term reference site, sort of an outdoor experimental laboratory to improve our understanding of estuaries. You'll see that there's more than one logo here. There's the NOAA logo that Senator Verger referenced. This is a true partnership program between the state of Oregon and the U.S. Department of Commerce National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. The area inside the red line is the current administrative boundaries of the South Slough Reserve. And just for point of reference for future discussions, you will see a small island that is right here in this inlet, the South Slough Inlet, that is known as Valeno Island. You'll also see a bridge that crosses over. This is the community of Charleston and the Empire District. The town of Coos Bay and North Bend are located roughly up in this area. The reserve occupies about 25% of the South Slough watershed. So we're part of a national system that was established by an act of Congress, and again, Congress called for states to nominate sites that might be suitable for improving our understanding of estuaries and coastal watersheds. If you look at our national system right now, you will see the South Slough Reserve is the only reserve of its kind, representing a very long range of coastline between San Francisco Bay and the entrance to Puget Sound. Our mission is to try and improve the understanding of estuaries throughout the whole Oregon coastline. The way that the South Slough Management Commission that appoints me and that I work for has undertaken its mission is to focus its efforts on three different program areas. So I call these the three legs of the stool that South Slough's programs sit on: education, research, and stewardship. It's by way of view looking north toward the community of Charleston, a photo taken from the Charleston Bridge. We'll start by just doing a quick overview of the education at South Slough. We, through the years, with grants and support from the state, have established a visitor information center at the reserve, 4 miles south of Charleston. And we get about 26,000 visitors a year. Many of those visitors are children in K-12 school programs that come typically from the southern portion of the state and the southern Willamette Valley, but they also come from places as far east as Vail, who have been long-term subscribers to our program when the kids from Vail come over to the coast. So we have exhibits at our information center and a network of trails that we take kids on to do educational learning experiences about estuaries. The other thing that we do in our education program is actually work with educators. We're involved in professional teacher development workshops, and we've also then focused on some very highly intensive programs with exceptional high school students where we actually engage these high school students in our research programs at South SLU. Because we're tied to our national partnership at NOAA, we're also involved in some nationwide programs. And through grants, we've been able to bring some technology to bear on this program called Estuary Live, where we actually get we're able to hire the satellite truck from down in Medford, I believe this one came from, and the TV crew will come up. And through technology, the film crew was tethered to their cable to the satellite program, and we can actually beam this up to a program in North Carolina that is coordinating this national initiative, and we will have then this information available on the internet so that kids from all over the world, not only just Oregon, but from all over the U.S. and the world, can learn from our local Sea Grant Extension agent about how salmon fisheries work and what the relationships between estuaries and salmon are. We are leaving our education program and going to the second leg of our stool is our research program. This is an aerial image overlooking the community of Charleston, the Port of Coos Bay's a marina facility, the downtown district of Charleston, the Port of Coos Bay's distant water fleet maritime facility, here the Charleston Bridge, the Reno Islands, and looking up into the two arms of the South SLU Inlet. One of the things that our research program has been involved in is assisting to try and understand how bacteria works in these estuaries, because shellfish are a very important product that comes from our estuary. The Coos Estuary is the largest oyster-producing bay in our state, and they are regulated by the amount of bacteria that's found in the water. So our research program at South SLU has been assisting to try and improve our understanding of the relationships between bacteria and the shellfish industry. So we're contributing information that supports water quality. Another thing that we've been working on for the past 10 years or so is working with the oyster industry to try and understand what the relationship is between commercial oyster cultivation in estuaries and some of the other natural habitats that you find in estuaries, such as eelgrass. Eelgrass is an important habitat in these tide flat areas. If you look at the right-hand image, you can see at low tide here there's some material sticking up above. These are long blade-like, meadow-like plants that grow 3 feet, 4 feet tall, that lie down at low tide but stand up at high tide and create places for small crabs and other creatures to live. If you notice, in some situations, the eelgrass beds disappear under certain cultivation techniques. These images were actually taken from down in Humboldt Bay in Northern California, where our research program was invited to assist the oyster growers in Humboldt Bay to try and see if it were possible to establish an appropriate spacing between these oyster rows so that it were possible for eelgrass to be maintained at the same time commercial oyster cultivation was going on. We set up some experiments and offered our recommendations to the producers and the regulators down in California. Another thing that we do that is part of our program is to keep a finger on the pulse of the system. This is a research site. We're trying to understand the dynamics of an estuary. The water level changes 10 feet every 6 hours because of the coming and going of the tide. So the physical conditions change quite dramatically there. And we're trying to understand the relationships between the changes in the conditions in an estuary and the kinds of of living communities that you find there. And so, in effect, we've wired this truly, as the founders had proposed, to provide us information about that with a series of water quality measuring instruments and taking some physical samples at six different locations along the shoreline of Saugus. We're just currently planning to meet with a group of people from the Port Authority and bringing some NOAA experts that are experts in modeling water movements to help us develop a better understanding of water movements in and out of the bay, as that might affect bacteria or oil spill predictions and hazard mitigation. Moving on, our stewardship program, the third leg of our stool, is really taking care of the investment that the state and the federal government has made in this place. We're currently involved in some very active habitat restoration work and have been producing some reports that we are providing to watershed councils up and down the coast. And I believe I provided your assistant with some copies of those technical reports, if they would be of interest at all. But we're working to try and restore some of the habitats that were found at the reserve. Here an image of a stream drainage channel that we excavated with the help of a explosive experts from Tillamook Bay, who helped us create a new channel where one had historically occurred, and there's the look of that channel now 3 years later, creating habitat for fish and other wildlife. So far we've restored about 70 acres of tidal habitat. Here's an example of us doing a helicopter lift of some large trees. Most all of our restoration work is guided by technical teams of experts that we recruit to assist us in planning and executing our restoration. And we're beginning now, after 10 years of work or so, to produce some technical publications that highlight some of the work we've done there. Here's the example of one of those technical publications that was designed specifically for watershed councils. As you're probably aware, up and down the coast there are people working to do habitat restoration for salmon recovery. And we've done some intensive studies here that we're hoping to share with other people up and down the coast. We're also, as Senator Verger mentioned, a very public place, and we take that mission seriously. My management authority takes that mission seriously. I've worked there for 20 years, and there hasn't been a year where they haven't encouraged us to make sure that we forge strong links with the community. This is an illustration of our Friends of South Slough Board of Directors, and then just an example of some of the volunteers who help us at the reserve. Because we recognize that the Coos Bay area is an economically challenged community and faces a number of challenges that I'm sure you're hearing about this session, we've been working with some of the other institutions in our area where we're actually using the reserve as a job training site and a springboard to help some less advantaged people develop some job skills that they might be able to transfer to other employment. You also heard reference to the Charleston Gateway Project. This is just another example of the work that the South Sioux Management Commission has tried to do to engage the community, in particular the community of Charleston. And just a schematic sketch showing some of the plans that came from the recently completed feasibility study. Because we're tied to a national program, we also have access to some resources that a state agency program may not have. And I've just shown an example of one of the NOAA research vessels that we've been able to enlist to help us study the ocean nearby the entrance to Coos Bay. We have for several years worked on some studying how the Dungeness crab, our market crab, produces little larvae that are about the size of your fingernail that float around in the ocean. We recognize that these young crab find their way into the estuaries and grow very actively there. The water is warmer and they grow twice as fast. With the help of this research vessel, we've been able to begin to at least try to understand how these little tiny floating animals go about finding the mouths of these rivers from the ocean. Some of the work that's been going on by our staff is recognized nationally, and I'm very proud to say that I work with a number of people that have been recognized nationally by their peers and by program leaders throughout our country. So that, in effect, completes my summary, just to remind you that our mission is to improve the understanding and stewardship of Pacific Northwest estuaries and coastal watersheds. In closing, I will just offer an introductory map to orient you to the discussions that will come from this discussion of Senate Bill 857. This map is an outline of the entrance to the port of Coos Bay, or the Coos Estuary. The community of Charleston is located here. The Charleston Bridge is located here. Molino Island is located here. And the South Sioux Reserve's current administrative boundary is this jagged line that describes this 5,000-acre protected site that's been managed as a protected site for just over 30 years. The blue line that is bold and describes this irregular shape is the perimeter line of the watershed. So everything that is inside of the blue line gathers water that is processed by the land that ultimately is fed into these small tributary streams that flows into the tidally influenced portion of the water body and ultimately into the Pacific Ocean at Charleston. The red line that crosses at Valino Island is the current northern limit that was established by the legislature in 1974 when the reserve was created. The statute just referenced that lands to the south of Valino Island, from Valino Island southwards inclusive, were to be managed as this proposed reserve. You can see that the land south of here has not all been acquired by the management authority. One of the principal reasons why that has been is because these landowners have not expressed an interest in selling their property to the reserve. This other red line is the line that I understand will be under discussion today for the amendment to this bill. This is an amended version of the bill that Senator Verger introduced, and this new line is the line she referenced in her presentation today. I think there's one more image. This is just a close-up of that same line. That ends my presentation. Thank you very much.
Any questions? Mr. Grable. Seeing none. Why was the amendments, do you know why the amendments were introduced? What was changed from the original bill?
Yes, I could show you what was changed if you would like. I can show you a copy of the original bill as it was drawn. The original language of Senate Bill 857 just said it changed the line from Valino Island southwards to the Charleston Bridge southwards. But as Senator Verger mentioned, she received input at public hearings and has amended the bill that drops it down south of this portion of Charleston. It excludes a Port of Coos Bay facility here and follows a shoreline segment. So if I back up, you will see there's the line from the air. This is the Charleston Bridge looking south. There's the Valino Island line. The amended line will follow this shoreline and take off right about here and head over to this point. The original line would have drawn right across here. So I'll just back up one more. So there you can see that again, if we're flipping north and south a bit. But here this new line, the original line would have been an extension of this east-west line that would have just gone right across the Charleston Bridge. I'll point out that the amended version also has a very, very small island parcel right here. That is the three tax lots that are associated with this Charleston Gateway project that would enable the reserve to build a visitor information center. And in the community of Charleston. So this line has been amended. That property was historically included in the original version of 857, but now it exists as a small island parcel that will just enable the reserve to do that gateway project proposal.
Representative Sumner.
Sir, the parcel of land in question between the two red lines, is it privately owned and is there a willing seller?
Mr. Chair, Representative Sumner, not all of the property between this line is in private ownership. A portion of it is in public ownership and a portion of it is in private ownership. What this line, this change of this line will do will empower the South Sioux Management Authority, give them legal authority to negotiate with property owners. It is not the intent of the reserve to acquire all that property. It just gives them legal authority to negotiate.
Got it. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Okay, we'll go to the sign-up sheets. And again, looks like everybody came from 100 miles or further, so that isn't going to give anybody an advantage. But we'll start calling the folks, our first panel of three, and these will be supporting the measure. This will be Nikki Whitley, Woody, Ann Hannes, and Diana Yonker. If they would come forward, please.
Mr. Chair and members, Nikki Whitty, I'm the Coos County Commissioner, and I did bring written testimony, so I submitted that. You said if we did, you didn't want us to.
Yeah, but you're an elected official, and I know you from when I was a county commissioner.
Okay.
Nikki, why don't you go ahead and start off?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I really don't have anything different to tell you from what you heard from Senator Berger, except maybe the history of why I'm supportive of that gateway project might be important. Back in 1997, the community and the Charleston Merchants Association went through a strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats analysis of the Charleston area. And then the strategic plan and the whole purpose was to become a destination center and have a really nice visitor center. And in the portion of the bill that Mike was talking to you about just a minute ago, the little island, if they're allowed to purchase that property, then there's a chance that Gateway Project might move forward. It may be with the Merchants Association if they decide that's what they want to do. It may not be. It may be just a project of the SLU. But without the authority to buy it, then it's useless for both entities.
Any questions of Commissioner Whitty? Seeing none, Dan? Oh, Representative Greenlee.
Do you have a sense of how the overall balance of the county commission is on this favor?
We're not in agreement.
How many members are there?
There are three.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Okay, Dan?
Thank you. My name is Ann Hannes. I'm Director of Department of State Lands. I'm also serves as Chair of the South Sioux Management Commission. I'm not going to go through all of my testimony in the interest of time, but I do want to have some highlights. The Department of State Lands is the managing partner state agency for the South Sioux National Estuary and Reserve. This bill changes the statutory description. It does not, in and of itself, change the boundary. It only allows, one, if there'd be a willing seller, two, if it complies with the South Sioux Management Plan that was developed with extensive local input and review and would be also with the approval of the South Sioux Commission, three, if the legislature would approve the expenditure of funds and also if the legislature approves applying for and accepting a federal grant. It would allow us to move forward with the Charleston Gateway Project if we were to use federal funds for that project. We have recently been advised that the South Sioux would not be able to receive the grant from the federal government for this project because, according to NOAA, the South Sioux National Estuary Reserve would have to own that parcel of land in order to be able to use the federal funds on that parcel to acquire the parcel. 857 would allow us to improve the future opportunity to apply again for that grant and hopefully be successful the next time. The South Sioux Management Commission did vote in favor to support Senate Bill 857. We, also, Department of State Lands, supports the amendments proposed today by Representative Roblin, and that would add an east-west-south boundary. Also, I think Senator Berger mentioned that as well. And it would make the north boundary more specific to address concerns of locals, such as the port. So I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Any questions of Director Hannes? I have just one. And I've been told that if this expansion does not take place, that grant money goes elsewhere. Are you aware where that money might go if the estuary doesn't, or if the SLU doesn't get it?
Jericho, there are other national estuary reserves in the country, so that money then was used for a project elsewhere in the country.
Outside the state of Oregon, then?
Outside of the state of Oregon, that's correct.
Thank you. Ms. Yonker?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I am Diana Yonker, a 38-year resident of the Crown Point area, Crown Point Road. I live directly across from Valeno Island, which I was there in 1967, and we are right on that edge of that boundary that exists now. And Senate Bill 857 is good for our local area as well as for the state of Oregon because it will help to preserve and enhance an area that is unique in our United States. Inclusion of new boundaries will give property owners, such as I, the ability to choose to sell their property to the South Sioux Reserve if we so desire. It will also give potential to the reserve to increase amenities to its visitors, more areas for opportunities to spend time to enjoy and experience observing a functioning natural nursery for fish, crustaceans, mammals, bivalves, all sorts of flora and fauna that is in a pristine, still unpolluted area that could be more easily available and accessible to the greater public, not just a select few, of which I am one. This is why I present my plea to you to please vote to pass Senate Bill 857 to give our small coastal community the opportunity to open up possible expansion of a great natural resource that will in turn help us pursue our goals for economic stability through ecotourism. Thank you very much.
Any questions, Ms. Young? Sorry I didn't bring your husband up at the same time, but he just happened to be split here on the list.
That's fine. That's probably a good thing for you. Thank you.
Tiffany, we have... It'll
be a good thing for him, too.
We have 18 people
signed to testify, 11 in favor and 7 opposing. So we'll get the three of the those that are opposing this measure in Marvin Caldera, Frank Williams, and Ruth Barber. Marker. Marvin, you were first on the list.
So. Okay. The House Land Use Committee, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I'm Marvin Caldera, President of ILW Local 12, Coos Bay, Oregon. Thank you for hearing on SB 857 today. I'm here today to oppose Measure 857, SBA 857. I attended the meeting held at the Power Squadron Room Building in Charleston, Oregon on April the 23rd, 2005. This meeting had to do with expanding the South Sioux estuary boundaries. Speaking in favor of this expansion was Senator Joanne Berger and Mike Grable, manager of the South Sioux Estuary. After meeting, I came to the conclusion that this expansion would not be good for the community. With the Southwood Estuary Valley stay where they are now, the estuary will be a good neighbor. If they expand the boundaries, then they become a controlling entity. The Charleston Fishing Boats, the Commercial Fishing Boats, the Charleston Shipyard, the Canneries, the International Port of Coosa Bay, Shipping Port, and everyone living in the watershed buffer zone will come under the scrutiny of the Southwood Estuary, including the North Spit. My question is, what other reason would the Southwood Estuary have been expanding the boundaries, other than to gain more control? The ILW Local 12 Longshore Union held a special meeting on May the 7th at 11 a.m. In that meeting, we discussed the Southwood Estuary expansion. At the end of the meeting, a vote was taken, and the vote was 100% against the Southwood Estuary expansion. Any questions?
How many people did you say you represent, Robin?
Well, I represent about close to 100 people, including the casual longshore. Yeah.
Any other questions? Representative Greenman?
Yes. When you voted on, did you vote on the current boundary that's in the amendment or on the other boundary? And if you voted on the other boundary, does the current one in the amendment make a difference to you?
Did we vote on the current boundary or?
There's an amended boundary.
We didn't vote. We don't want the boundary expanded. We don't want it to move from special location. We don't want it to move at all.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
I'm Frank Williams. I've lived in the Bay Area since 1958-59. I just live right over the hill from there. I'm the next estuary. I don't think quite that that map covered right, quite over to my place that he had on the deal there. And I'm here to speak in opposition to Senate Bill 857. I don't think the proposed bill for taking lands off tax rolls is the best interest for Coos County. I've never believed that. It sounds more like a banal way of thinking. If you do think that way, that's where people I talk to. I looked at, also with the four C's, the Coos County Citizens Caucus. We had a meeting the other night. I didn't know that I had to have all these typed up. So I just give you a letter of some of the things we talked about in our meeting. And the Caucus Citizens wasn't in favor of this at all. Changing the boundary or even having it. They take 500 acres as ample. Not the bill, Grayville is not doing a good job down there, but we feel that he has enough adequate to do with what he's doing there and enough to take care of. I've named representatives in there, but I won't mention their name. You can read it on your report there. And if they're supportive of this, I don't feel that they're listening to the constituents. One of the things that bothers me is about the Nature Conservancy, South Sioux Conservancy, the watersheds, Division of State Lands, Ducks Unlimited. A lot of that's happened in our area. And nice ranches. I tell you, right above Bannon Bridge on the north bank, there's 400 acres there. I would give anything to have that place. They're going to be fed in that. There's another 300 acres up there. And I just talked to the guy yesterday. I went down and got fresh information yesterday about what I'm talking about. Somebody, it's either the Conservative or the South Coast Sioux Conservative, they've got $3.5 billion. They bought land all the way from Bannon Bridge Cliff to Power. Why do they need all this land? Why do these guys need all this extension? I'm not in favor of taking land. Somebody's got to pick up. I don't care if it's $1,200. Somebody's got to pick up them taxes. Now I'm retired. I got a law firm come up here and pound on desk. I don't like getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning and come up and bother you guys. You guys are doing your job. I see a lot of these names in the Capital Press and a lot of the good that you're doing. I'm just hoping that you guys will see things the right way. I feel that when I elect somebody, that he'll be a good steward of the land just like I am. And that's the taking care of the land, not that the sanctuary or reserve isn't a good steward, but they've got land there, and I don't think they should expand on it. And I hear about money being coming in for grant money, whether it stay in Oregon or not. I have a problem with the tax dollars coming from these grants. When the federal grant money come out of this pocket and your state pocket, you know, grants come with certain things. When we have an area that's depressed, needs jobs, is this going to be, I seen some, that was a nice representation there, but you know, $1 million grant for 1 year, is that going to do a lifetime job for the area, family wage jobs? This is what we're going to be thinking about on this grant money. And we're talking about fish. I'm also, and I was a member of this Coos River STEP, one of the largest STEP groups, and so I know a little bit about fish. They have about 200 members. I'm everywhere else. Member of the Eagles. I talk to a lot of people. I'm an ex-auctioneer. I'm a rancher, which is why I'm concerned and here today about taking a buck. So I just hope you guys will see fit to really do the right thing here. I'm not in favor, and I don't want to take up a lot of your time because you have a lot of people here to testify, and I want to thank you for your time.
Any questions? We'll be in agreement.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We've been hearing a lot of testimony on Measure 37 here, and I'm sure that's on your mind.
37 is on my mind, yes.
And particularly talking about private property rights and the ability for private property owners to be able to do whatever they damn well please with their land. Do you have a problem with these private property owners being able to sell their land to the estuary if that's what they want to do?
If they want to sell the estuary, there is no stopping them. It's their God-given right. They own that property. But I would be mad as heck, and I'd be up here every day jumping on desks if that line would have run over to my property, and I've ridden horses all back in there. I've lived on 30 acres just right over the, I got 30 years just right over that hill. On the next estuary, I can ride horses down in there. It's all brushed in now. But I'd have a problem. Of course, I have a problem with the neighbor of God, you know. So, everything's bad on your side of the fence. And whatever I do, being a good steward, doesn't always please him. You know, you can't make everybody happy, and I understand that. You guys have got a tough decision here. But you also have got a bigger problem than just this estuary. And I don't want to carry on, but you guys know about it. I told you about all the names, and that's just part of them. People that take the land. Rocky Mountain Elk Fountain issue, we have people, the Ducks Unlimited, they flood nice ranches and farms. And one from my friend Jerry Doherty the other day, who's right there on the North Bank, he says, you know what they want to do? They want to buy my farm ground down there. They want to flood it, and they want to make it ugly. They want to let the tussock grow back in it, and they want willows back in it, and it's going to be ugly. And it won't be fit for nothing. Nothing live there. The bug life there for the fish, folks, that isn't it. It's STEP programs up and down Oregon. It's going to bring fish back. Now, I got to quit taking your time up. You got any more questions?
Mr. Williams, you mentioned takings. Can you give me an instance where there is a taking of land involved with this bill?
On this property, I can't. But I can tell you over in our district, on the Libby Drainage District, where they've taken land out of our taxing district, we got to go back in and put tide gates in and everything where the port, Coos Bay, is run dealing with the last thing. That's going to cost us $several thousand. Not just people who have shit's been good to us. They give us $80,000 worth of tide gates, but then 2 years later they come in, pack rows every 2 feet on the side of the creek and in the creek for 150 feet. That's an environmental dam. You know what I mean? So they've been good to us, but then they go overboard. So there's good and there's bad. You know, you guys got a heck of a deal here to weigh that out. I understand.
Okay.
Did I answer your question?
I think so.
China?
Right at the beginning you did.
Yeah.
Representative Anderson. Thank you, Mr. Chair. How big is the South Sioux now?
The South Sioux now? Yeah.
The GP was supposed to give them...
$4,700.
GP was supposed to give them a neighborhood of five permanent labor.
And we're talking about adding...
Adding.
I don't know. I called the county tax assessor. I was trying to plot out how much, and they, unless I had addresses, they wouldn't. They didn't know. Couldn't estimate.
Would you estimate it's the same size or half as big or
looks
twice as big?
The same size. To me, when I look at the map, I mean, there's the map.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
That's
quite an increase.
That's all right.
Let's go. Ruth, got to find out where I am. Ruth?
Thank you. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I want to thank you for hearing Senate Bill 857A today. And I'm here to oppose it, but I'm also representing, I gave you a little booklet here, but I'm also representing nine other people, I hope, by turning in my written testimony there. And there's also, I'm representing a contractor, a major contractor in Coos County, a timber processing plant, a commercial fisherman, several Charleston merchants, many Charleston residents that could not come today because they are either working, most of them working, and couldn't make the drive. I've lived in Coos County, did the worst protocol. My name is Ruth Barker, and I have lived in Coos County for about half my life, for 31 years, and I've seen changes in the county, and I have several concerns. I am a wife, I am a mother, a retired teacher from Coos County, and a former owner of three businesses in Coos County, and I also am currently on the Charleston Merchants Board, but I'm not here representing the board today. I'm here as a citizen because the measure has been tabled until after we see what happens with Senate Bill 857. The main thing I'm concerned about, and the people that have written in the packet that I gave you, are we're really concerned about, as Shona said, about tax rolls, lands coming off tax rolls. And I understand it has to be a willing seller to attain these lands. But I also, from a school teacher point of view, and that know that our schools definitely need money, and I know part of it comes from timber receipts and part of it comes from state and federal monies, but a lot of it comes from the property taxes from our county, which also is representing for people that want fire and police guaranteed as far as being able to have that protection. So while it might sound a little bit, maybe $1,300 have gone off the tax roll with the property that's been bought. If that little red dot on the property goes off, we're looking at several thousand dollars off of the tax rolls for our schools. And a couple of days ago, we had in the paper that they're short $1,045,000. And every time we take off several thousands of dollars off of the tax rolls, it's less money for our children and less money for our schools to be able to teach our children. I really see this as tax rolls go up. I almost think every tax or property owner in Coos County needs to be worried because the commission has to balance their budget somehow. And to me, like when you lose some a little somewhere else, the other property taxes are going to eventually be going up to balance the budget. And I know I'm being simplifying the case there, but it is one way. But I do just want to point out, as property, we look at 4,700 acres of no property taxes being collected already. I love the South SLU. I've taken my school classes to the South SLU. I love their programs they do, and it was a wonderful presentation. You can see what they've done with 4,700 acres. They've done a wonderful job, and they've brought monies in to really embellish and build beautiful buildings and classroom buildings and areas for children to do research and educate. So while no property tax is there, more possibly coming off, that's a concern for me. I also have, and I put the newspaper away and didn't bring it, but I do want to quote for my second point, and it'll be my final point, a point that I want to make, is that I want to quote out of the World on May 4th, Martin Cowley, Director of Communications and Freight Mobility for the Oregon International Port of Coos Bay, stated in The World on May 4, 2005, "They, the Reserve, have their mission, we have ours." He said this in the context of moving the proposed Reserve Northern Border Line away from shipyards in Charleston. The NOAA Ocean and Coastal Resource Management Regulations for the estuary, and I've given you all copies of that in the packet, does have a different mission than the actual port does, and from a lot of economic development. Ecotourism isn't the only thing that's going to bring people to Charleston. And mostly I think we need good jobs not only Charleston, but all of Coos Bay, and I would like to see our senators and representatives really put forth an effort in that. So my final line is, if it's good enough for the international port to have the boundary line moved because of their concerns, I think it is also a good reason for the residents, property owners, for the people who care about children and want schools financed, for the public that wants to have guaranteed police and fire protection, to also have a mission and want that line to not maybe move at all, because I really believe that 4,700 acres is wonderful, and I know they can go out and dip and do things in the rest of the estuary too if they need to do testing. And so I'm opposed and believe that the land should be able to allow to be stay on the tax rolls, and that the northern border should stay where it is at Billy Moore Island. I'm done.
Any questions? Seeing none, thank you. Representative Zimmer.
Yes.
I just want to comment that I think given our state funding formula, the schools will get the same amount of money regardless of the amount.
I understand that.
You have in your petitions, maybe you're not the right one to ask this, the NOAA Ocean and Coastal Resource Management Regulations, are they there because...
They're just to reference what some of the missions are that go. You'll see some of those letters that you have there that reference.
My question is, would those regulations be in place even if there wasn't the South Slough Management Area?
Does
NOAA have regulations about ocean and coastal resource management?
I believe that says that it's for the estuary.
Perhaps you can answer. I mean, NOAA has regulations, and I wonder whether those NOAA regulations of the bay would be in place even if there wasn't the South Slough Reserve.
Yes, since those are specifically for the estuary reserve, I would doubt it, because it wouldn't even have been written, because I think that's what it specifically says there on the little sub part that they are the National Estuarine Research Reserve System Regulations.
Perhaps we can hear from somebody else if that's the case.
I guess I don't quite understand your question.
I do. I just want... Mr. Chair,
Mike, come on back up. Maybe you can answer. Both of you are excused. Thank you very much. I also want to ask John Griffith to come up with my apology that his name was on the list and I didn't call him earlier. I made you sit a little longer, John. But Mike, if you go ahead and answer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Greenlick, I believe, although I haven't seen this, this would make reference to Section 315 of the Coastal Zone Management Act. Is that what these rules are for the...
921, I think.
The NOAA has jurisdiction over a wide variety of things. They manage fisheries. They make navigation charts. So I believe these rules are explicit rules that reference the management of national estuarine research reserves. If in fact that is the case, that is the federal guidance that is given to states regarding the establishment and the operation of a reserve. So if a coastal state were interested in proposing to designate an area, those would be the guidance that the federal government would give to the state to establish and manage a site.
So if the site, if the South Slough wasn't there, these regulations would not...
Not to my knowledge.
Not regulate.
Yes, if those regulations apply explicitly to the reserve, in the absence of a reserve, those regulations would not apply.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman Garrard. Members of the committee, my name is John Griffith. I'm a Coos County Commissioner. Thanks for the opportunity to talk today. I have some comments, rather lengthy, but I imagine they'll end up in the file more than get read today because of their length. First off, just while I was back there making notes, a couple of things I'd like to speak to. First, Senator Verger mentioned that Coos County bought 135 acres for a park. I led that project and felt I had to, because if I hadn't, Forest Service would have got it. Clearly they didn't have the money to plan or do anything, so it would be locked up forever. I managed to get the money from the Oregon All-Terrain Vehicle Account Allocation Committee, $824,000, and we're building the park. But it was sort of, you know, private land's nice, but if it's going to go to the Forest Service, it's like having to be owned by another country, in my opinion. The next one, we heard... DSL director, Ann Hannes, said that, I guess it was Nikki, really my colleague, that the, that the South Slough Management Commission voted in favor. Well, Coos County Commissioner Gordon Ross is on that commission. He voted in opposition. The, Director Ann Hannes mentioned that this would be only willing sellers. I know there's one person in the audience here, Patty Kuntz, who I hope you get to hear from. Her husband, Dieter Kuntz, owned 140 acres in the South Slough, and maybe she might have time to tell you how unwilling sellers become willing sellers just through fatigue and being ground down.
She has started to testify, John.
Great. Saturday, I interviewed a John and Betty Fredrickson in their Coos Bay home. He told me they were indeed threatened with condemnation, and just through persistence and wearing him down, he ultimately gave up his farm. In 2003, it would have been a Century Farm in the South Slough. It was set up by his grandfather. He loved the place. He still has pictures. It still hurts. George and Mary Tracy, in my comments, George Tracy is dead. I couldn't find Marion, but Mr. Fredrickson gave me these letters. Those are attachment A. This is George Tracy writing, since we were threatened with the loss of our ranch by the exercise of eminent domain. Then again, on his next page, he mentions the same thing, that the unethical imposition of eminent domain by a representative of Governor Tom McCall, and he says if they'd have noted before that they might be going to use condemnation, he says the composition of the audience would have been significantly different and the response would have been predominantly negative. That was when they were planning the reserve. One person mentioned was asked how large is the reserve. It's 4,770 acres. And with the amendments even, if it goes to the watershed, it could be increased by many multiples. I don't know. I'd have to look at a map. 5, 10, something like that. Okay, those are the comments that I heard. These are just sort of general remarks. The Coos County Board of Commissioners in action, initiated by Commissioner Gordon Ross, just days after Senator Verger introduced 857, he wrote, and we passed unanimously a resolution opposing further property acquisition by the state or federal governments in Coos County. Note I left county government out. We sent a letter to Joanne Verger stating that we could not support her bill, also signed by all three commissioners. The South Slough, like all NERs, which is National Estuarine Research Reserves, finds its authority in the Coastal Zone Management Act, or CZMA, which is, I have it listed, and the Act's implementing regulations at 15 CFR Part 921. the city's role and organization be given further definition in Oregon law at ORS 273553. NERRs exist as site for long-term research and are additionally authorized to conduct education and interpretation. They are also directed to protect the site's suitability for long-term research. That's the limit of their statutory authority. They are not authorized to assemble real estate portfolios for protection or basically to prohibit lawfully zoned land uses. Mr. Graybill was reported in the World newspaper Coos Bay on 4 May 2005 as saying, quote, "The proposed amendment to SB 857 would inhibit the SLU from acquiring critical areas of the tidal estuaries, marine and upland habitats, including eelgrass beds, bald eagle nesting sites, and harbor seal haulouts. The SLU does not manage and lacks the authority to manage eagles and other wildlife. ODFW does. The DSL already owns all the estuaries in Oregon, and it also protects eelgrass beds and pinniped haulouts. So they don't certainly need to have an expansion in order to get title to something the state already owns. As to the 4,770 acres they own, most of it's forest land. It does not maintain its forest in a responsible manner, even though its OARs allow it to thin. Its forest is dead with trees, overstocked with trees and underbrush. Standing upwind of the Coos County Forest from prevailing summer northwest direction wind when wildfire is most common. And besides, a heavily traveled road with other ignition hazards. If a fire started in the slew timberland, it would quickly ladder up from the heavy crowded understory and crown in the treetops. Such a scenario puts the Coos County Forest at great risk of incineration and it would do horrid damage to the South Slough environment. Coos County earns a net of $2.5 million a year from our county forest to public finance our public services. This has been brought to the SLU's attention. They've done nothing about it. Senator Jack Ripper, he's the father, legislative father of South SLU. He had bills in 75 and 77. Senator Ripper wanted to put the state forester and the Coos County forester on the board of the South Slough Management Commission. He created it largely. He was in the Senate, but it was HB 3269 in 1977, and he didn't prevail. But the reason why, and he said, I've got it in my comment, is he said there's going to be logging there. We expect it to going to be done under the Oregon Forest Practices Act. We wanted the Coos County Forester on the Management Commission, quote, so we don't get into that fight later on with the county running downwind from basically a conflagration hazard. You might hear later that ecotourism is a major industry and the SLU is a major part of that industry. Ecotourism has always been a major industry. We're not Portland or Las Vegas. We're outdoor tourism. Major drivers are fishing and off-highway vehicle operation and more recently golf. A small subset of tourists come to watch wildlife and a subset of them come to have someone or something interpret to them what they're looking at. And that's just great. South SLU gets some of these tourists and I hope to get more. However, Oregon does not need to add land to the SLU's real estate portfolio to increase the role. Moreover, Coastal Zone Management Act and CFR don't authorize it to be really a promoter of or a driver of tourism. Recent legislative history, DSL introduced Senate Bill 303 in the 2001 session, died without a hearing. Then Rep. Joanne Verger introduced HB 2812 in the last session and died without a hearing. Now we're here today. I'll wrap it up. Any comments, questions?
Questions for the Commissioner. Representative Ackerman.
I'm having a hard time getting a focus on how property rights, private property rights, are impaired by the mere movement of this boundary line as stated in the bill. I hear stories, but can you give me an idea of what specific private property rights are implicating?
Yes, Chairman Gerard, Representative Ackerman. If you look only at the right of being able to sell property to whoever you want, not letting the SLU buy land or the government buy land anywhere it wants would impair that one right. If you're looking at having your next door neighbor be a rather more aggressive preservationist, philosophically driven public entity, it's going to impair your right to enjoy even the lawful uses of your land. My other concern is, okay, maybe you should be able to sell whoever you want, but right now, if a person sells their property to the National Forest Service system, the local county commissioners, that's the only one right remaining of all rights that the counties used to have. They can prevent it from going into the National Forest system, which is part of what the argument I used to keep the Forest Service back while I found the money to buy that ranch, that park that Joanne was talking about. That and my other concern is that if you sell it to, say, somebody like the Forest Service or South Slope, people can look at the property revenue and only the property revenue today. My concern is that when you sell it to them, all future options forever are gone. So it's like freezing that X thousand, hundred, whatever you're earning today, and saying we're going to consider only that. I look a little bit longer, take a longer view of things, sir.
Just to follow up, so the Act doesn't compel anyone to sell real estate against their will, is that correct?
Chairman Gerard, Representative Ackerman. No, it does not compel them to sell it against their will, just this SBA 57.
Thank you.
Commissioner, the land proposed to be expanded, that expansion, what kind of tax dollars is that land producing right now? Do you have any numbers on that? When we talk about the, you talk about the loss of property tax dollars. Any idea what amount you're talking about?
Yes, Chairman Gregg. No, I could look at a map. I know an awful lot of it's forest land, so there'd be a low ad valorem rate, and then you'd get it back when you'd harvest it.
Okay. Any further questions? Thank you, Commissioner. Tom Yonker, David Ford, Ann Donnelly, come forward, please. Tom, you want to start off, and then we'll go to David and then Ann. So. Well, that's last. I don't know how I got into that.
I'm Tom Yonker. I reside at 62135 Crown Point Road. And my wife hasn't gotten mad at me for 43 years, so I reside with her in the same house right across from Bloom's Island. And when these people are thrown around their 30 years of being on South Slough, I started there in 1941 when I got out of Kaiser Hospital in North Bend. So I've been on South Slough for quite a long time. I grew up there. I've walked every bit of it. And I don't think anybody in this room, or very few people, have walked every bit of South Slough Sanctuary. I've walked all around in the mud and all over the place. I've enjoyed it thoroughly for all my life. And as I look at it, the opportunity for people to buy a piece, to buy some property and preserve it in the natural beauty that it is, that is my desire. And John Griffith saying, if you're the next door neighbor to the South Slough, they put pressure on you, that is absolutely not true. Because I've lived close to South Slough Sanctuary. I've lived in my residence since 1967. Sanctuary didn't come into existence until 74. They have never put any pressure on me at all. And I'm not on the border. My tidelands are joining their tidelands. And I know the tidelands are owned by DSL, but I still pay taxes on them. And so I'm a contiguous neighbor of the South Slough Sanctuary. And it's been my dream. And I've been a school teacher for 40 years. I've been a coach for 41 or two. I've dealt with kids a long time, and I've dealt with school systems for a long time. And I know that our funding comes down from the state. We used to have local funding, but we don't anymore. It comes down from the state. So it won't affect our funding. And sometimes I wonder about the practicality of some of the citizens of Coos County. At one time, the Coquille tribe asked for Senator Hatfield had a bill for the federal government to access 54,000 acres of timberland from BLM so that the money didn't go back to Washington, D.C. and then come back to the state. And under this school funding, you send if you get a timber cut on county land, the funding from that timber cut is offset at your state. In other words, it's a wash. You don't get anything out of it. And the Coquille tribe had possibility plans for 54,000 acres, and they would get a cut on that, and they would put a lot of it in the school districts, Middle Point and Coquille and those areas. And Coos County voted that down 85% to do that. The Coquille tribe got 5,000 acres in their forest land. We receive the profits of those 5,000 acres, and that's as much as we would have received out of 54,000 acres. And that was explained to the citizens of Coos County, and they voted against it. So sometimes I wonder if they really think about what they're looking at. And I think that this is a great thing for Charleston. And being a longtime resident, I've been a commercial fisherman. I worked in the woods. I worked with a company that was sponsored by the Longshoremen. I represent a tribe that has over 800 members. And as I sit out and look out my window, I have a piece of land that's right next to the road, on the end of the road on Crown Point Road. There's a little sliver of land there, and we had three piling, and so I was thinking about building a dock. But it would make a great place for South Slough to build a dock and put a little imposition there. They could bring down kayaks and canoes and have greater access to the sanctuary if that were available to them. And a lot of places along there would make it greater access to the sanctuary if we were a willing seller. Now, I'm not saying I would sell a piece of property to them, but there are some pieces of property that are like that, that do that. And the line that they drew up on the thing goes to Lakin's Point. The tribe owns the end of Lakin's Point, and the tribe is in favor of this for the purposes that it helps the people of Coos County. And some of the things that I observe that school kids won't observe and a lot of people won't observe because they don't get to see it. But I can sit in my window and look out. And how many of you have ever seen a raccoon go out on the mud flats and take his little fingers and reach down inside and pull out a ghost shrimp and chomp on ghost shrimp? Or seen the river otters work across the mud flats? Eagles come down, and remember a few years ago, Weyerhaeuser had a fish rearing pond, and they put out thousands of Chinook salmon in our deal. And we got errant Chinook salmon that came up there. Well, the tide went out, and in this little tide pool, there's a Chinook salmon stranded. This eagle comes down, and you see him grab that salmon and eat a salmon on the side. Also, I saw him grab a cormorant and eat a cormorant. I've seen coyotes. I even saw a cougar. Watched a cougar walk up by my house, and there was a bank there about 7 or 8 feet tall. And the thing just one little bounce, it was up on top of that bank. And you see an awful lot of this, and people don't get to see this. And what my hope is, and my dream, is that Coquille Tribe can partner with South Slough Sanctuary and build a series of plank houses, starting with Lakin's Point. And if you ever get Yonkers Point, if you ever have found a willing seller into Yonkers Point, I think it owns some by Desert Pacific in Utah right now, but that's 80 acres there, and it'd be a beautiful place for a plank house. And then you have Reno's Island for a plank house, and you get Long Island's Point and all of those areas, Winchester Bay. But people could come in a kayak and kayak all the way up, stop over at a plank house, stay overnight, build a fire out in front, go down and gather cockles, and put a pan of water on and heat those up and eat cockles, and do those kind of things, the things that I enjoyed. I enjoyed picking crabs out of streams, and picking up cockles, walking all over the place, and fishing a canoe and fishing boats across the mud flats. And it's just a beautiful area. And by allowing that boundary to come down another few miles down the river, you would allow some of that area to be put in there if people were willing to sell. And it would open up opportunities for access to South Sioux Sanctuary that is not there now. And you would more than make up for it, I believe, in the dollars you would recycle from local citizens and also from visitors that would come from out of state, other countries, and all over the United States. It's a, if you're ever up there and if you ever want to go out in South Sioux Sanctuary, just give me a call on the phone. If we have an apartment downstairs, you can stay there if you want to, and I'll show you South Sioux,
whichever way you vote.
That doesn't make any difference which way you vote. We're just presenting, okay? I've been a coach for a long time, and you present what you present and what you believe in. And I don't believe the same as some of the people in this room. And I like John Griffin, but I don't believe the same way he does. You know, I like a lot of things he says. We're both belong to OCZMA, but I don't agree with him. And I don't agree with Gordon Ross. I happen to agree with Nikki Whitty. And if Nikki was running against those people, I would vote for Nikki. But I like all of those people, too. They're just doing their job. So we're just presenting everything we can to do our job, too.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Yonkers, would you have a week from Saturday open?
My wife might be gone, no sir. That's my hospital. I might not be as great.
Seriously, the question is this. With 4,700 acres, wouldn't it be possible to do a lot of those plank houses within that area?
You could put one on Bolinas Island. You wouldn't be able to. Marcus Point or any of those areas you wouldn't be able to do, but you'd be able to do one there. And, mm-hmm. and I'm going to pursue that goal anyway, mm-hmm. regardless. But what I'm saying is, if you had one on the Lakens, Donkers, you know, you'd add a couple things like this. And if you had one over, if they decided to sell Crown Point, there's a beautiful little bay there that has a midden on it that would make an excellent place for a plank house, and then the Coco tribe and the Coos tribe could convey their culture of what it was like and the things and an educational point. It's not only educational in the animals and the fauna and the flora, but it's also educational about the people who lived there and what they believed. And their form of forestry was a little different than it is now. They actually burned. They didn't cut, because it was too hard to hack down a big tree with a forest, but they had a burning policy that took care of the underbrush and things.
My second question is, it appears to me that the Attorney General has taken a position on navigability, and I'd have to think the estuary is a navigable river, that pretty much you can use the water. You may not be able to get off through a mile inland, but you can use the water. So kayakers could still use all of that area, it would seem to me.
Have you ever paddled a canoe?
Canoe, not a kayak.
Canoe. You ever tried to go against the wind in a canoe? One man.
I've tried to go up the road against the wind. That's
it's, you got to get in the back of the canoe. You got to get right in front of the canoe, and you got to paddle on both sides because the wind will work you back and forth. And what I'm saying is, if they were able to drive up the end of Crown Point, yeah. and then there was a little dock there, the wind wouldn't be such a problem to them, because if you have to come from down on the Charleston Bridge and you come all the way on up, it's a little difficult. And you also are able to use more of the tide, because your tide runs on 6-hour basis, so you can go in with the flowing tide and get and explore more and come back out and get a landing place that would be easier than if you had to come all the way from the bridge.
Representative Anderson, Mr. Yonker is a member of the
Coos County Coquille Tribe, so he's got a little more history about the canoe stuff.
I'm going to learn about kayaks, though.
Mr. Ford.
My name is David Ford, and my wife and I live in our dream home on 5 acres in the shores of Browns Cove, which is a part of the South Sioux Estuary. First of all, I'm very heartened by the fact that many of the opponents of the bill recognize what a fine job that Mike Graybill has done at the reserve. I'd like to also respond quickly to some of the criticisms that have been laid out so far. Commissioner Griffith talked about condemnation of property and restriction of rights of the neighbor's property that the reserve could do. They have no authority to do such. All they can do is report, just like I can report if I see my neighbor dumping oil into the bay. I can report them, but I can't stop them. They cannot do that. Eminent domain has been mentioned. There was eminent domain in certain properties, but it was at the request of the seller so that they could receive some tax breaks. The last thing I'd like to mention as far as criticism was property tax money taken off the tax rolls and money not going to schools. There's only a finite amount of money, $2 million, which is in a bank, which could be used for acquisition of property. At the current rate, which I believe was $1.006 per thousand, that would relate to $2,000 a year in tax money, and 25% of that, which would go to schools, is $500 a year lost to schools. I'd like to start off by saying that nobody's mentioned Charlie Gustafson, which is where the money came from. Over 10 years ago, this man, who was an avid sportsman, passed away. In his will, he left $1.6 million to the reserve. That's been in the bank since that time and is up to about $2 million. He left it there for the sole purpose of acquiring lands which could be used for the mission of the reserve so they could acquire lands for more hunting and fishing for people in the area.
Mr. Ford, and the interest from that money goes to the school fund through the Division of State?
I'm not sure. I think it collects actually in the bank account itself.
Okay. Accrues.
I've heard of talks of expansion here, but the only thing that I can see expanding is opportunity. Opportunity for the Charleston Gateway Project, which is a visitor center, and would bring in over $900,000 of federal money, money that would be going elsewhere in the country and didn't come here. An expansion of a property owner's rights so that they could sell to whomever they want to, and some of those lands might be conservation easement lands, which are of no use to the owner, or say marshlands where they couldn't develop anyway, and an expansion of access to the bay so that other people could enjoy hunting and fishing and walking the hills of South Slope.
Any questions of Mr. Ford? Thank you. Mrs. Donnelly.
Thank you. My name is Ann Donnelly. I live at 9962 Oxford Lane. I, too, live on property that is immediately adjacent to South Slough. I've lived there for 11 years. I share a property line with South Slough. It runs down the center of a marsh. My husband and I have long talked about the idea that either as we grow older or whatever, it would be really nice to somehow have at least that portion of the marsh that we own become part of South Slough, because it makes no sense to be managing a marsh on one half side. We can't do that right now. We couldn't do that right now without this bill. I'd like to briefly respond to a couple of remarks also that Commissioner Griffith made. First, like Dave, we have had no experience whatsoever with South Slough as an aggressive neighbor in any way. In fact, I know my six neighbors to the left and the right, who also all share a property line with South Slough, all of them are in support of this bill as well. So this boogeyman of South Slough as this bad neighbor is simply the figment of somebody's imagination. I would also like to mention that Commissioner Griffith alluded to South Slough prohibiting lawfully zoned uses. Hasn't happened. In fact, the Port of Coos Bay has submitted a letter in support of this bill. The Port of Coos Bay's only concern was that the line not run through their shipyard because they didn't want people to be freaking out about whether they could do this or that. So the line was moved literally just across a little waterway, the mouth of Joni Slough, so it would be outside the shipyard, but it's right next to the shipyard. The line was also moved south from the community of Charleston, and that happened at this meeting that many people have referred to today. And that happened because the line, when it was originally, this whole line was originally proposed some years ago, the line of the Charleston Bridge had been proposed by the lobbyist for a large landowner who owns property that would be within this area within which acquisition would be permitted. South Slough didn't draw that line. They were never asked about that line. When they were asked, The court wanted it moved. Okay, it was dropped down. And then this meeting that I'm alluding to, I asked some of the folks who were concerned or worried, is there a place that you would be willing to have the line? And they said yes. And that is the line that's on the amendment you see today that runs across the top of an area called Indian Point and then shoots across due west to land at a place called Lincoln Point. The folks in Hurley and Charleston said that made them feel comfortable. I'm still not sure why people thought South Sioux would have regulatory power over any land it might pass, any land that it might buy, but if they do, that made them feel better. I worked for South Sioux in 1992, writing their management plan, so I have become somewhat familiar with all the statutes and regulations involved there, and I would like to speak very briefly to the question of what do they need this extra land for. I'm not sure how many of you have a map in front of you, but if you do, you can see that north of Valeno Island, the bay, the Sioux widens quite a bit. It's a very different place than the area south of the island. It's much higher energy. There are sandy beaches there, which do not exist in the upper part of the Sioux. There are some cliffs there that do not exist in the other part of the Sioux. Acquisition of these lands gives the Sioux potentially the opportunity to acquire habitats that are typical of an estuary, which it does not now have any management access to. I would add further that the acquisition that South Sioux may engage in is not restricted to fee title. They may acquire a conservation easement, in which case the taxes remain just as they are. And there are mainlanders who are willing to do that because they like the idea of having, knowing their land is going to be pledged in perpetuity, but they can continue to live there, for example. I would suggest, too, that we shouldn't be assuming at all that every piece of land inside this proposed area would be sold to the Sioux. In fact, I would be astonished if that were the case, because it seems to me if people are worrying about property taxes, we're going to see property taxes zooming up, because nothing could be more attractive than a piece of property that can say we're inside a protected area, we're inside a reserve, or we're adjacent to a reserve. The reserve, its existence, has ripple effects, pardon the pun, for all of the properties around it, and I think, too, will greatly increase the business taxes that are generated in Charleston. Another point that hasn't been mentioned yet is that crossing the Charleston Bridge is this kind of very symbolic thing where you are now moving into the wild, wonderful world of Charleston and the ocean beaches and all of that. As you cross the Charleston Bridge and look south, you see what appears to be an almost entirely undeveloped vista of the Sioux reaching far away, like some of those slides that Mike Bagel just showed you. The land that we're talking about is that view. We don't know who may or may not want to sell, but they should at least have the opportunity if they so chose, because as you've probably heard by now, those of us who live in the area, not who have businesses nearby, but who live in the area, are very in support of this bill, because we see this is the only way to at least create the possibility of protecting it and being allowed to use it then as a springboard for greater economic value in Charleston itself. And I think that's all I have to say.
Any questions for Ms. Donnelly? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Donnelly, are you not inside the estuary now?
Yes, sir. We share a property line with them.
Yep. And you would, at some time in the future, like to sell?
Yes, sir. We have discussed that at length.
Ms. Donnelly, does land in the Sioux, and maybe Mike Graber would be better to answer this, but does the land have to be concurrent, adjacent to one another?
No, it does not, because, as for example, the Gateway Project itself is a little island up there at the bridge itself. In my particular case, it should be, in my opinion, because you can't split a marsh in half and only manage half of it, but it is possible to have discrete areas that are the Sioux's ability to purchase just those.
And what about the shores of the estuary? Could you have go from an area that's covered in the estuary to an area that's not covered to another area that is covered?
Thank you for raising that point. I meant to address this as well. It would be a very big mistake to think that management and research on an estuary means that you don't look any higher than high tide. The shoreline and the upper watershed portions of an estuary are critically important, in part because they provide habitat for animals that use both the mudflats and the uplands, and because of the water that's coming down from the uplands into the estuary. You cannot have a research site when you have no management control over what things may be flowing into it. That's why that watershed line is of interest, but South Slough has not sought and is not now seeking permission to acquire the entire watershed. They are, however, trying to acquire, if they can, from those who are interested, lands that would allow them to, as I said before, expand their research capability to other habitats, other estuarine habitats, and the lands immediately around them that would be relevant to the management of those areas.
So the answer to my question is yes. You lost me.
I thought, are you seem to me to be talking about different tidal heights?
No.
I'm sorry.
I'm asking, can there be spotty land use as part of the estuary?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
So I could drive down one road, and I could be in the estuary, drive out of the estuary, and then back into the estuary?
Yes, sir. That can happen.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Anderson.
That brings up a question. Does this have to be designated as estuary for the federal government to buy any of the properties, or can they buy piecemeal like Representative Garrard is indicating?
There's two different legal issues here. One is the authority of the South Slough Management Commission as delegated to it by the legislature, and that's what we're directly addressing here. The South Slough Management Commission cannot acquire any land unless, as I understand it, you all have statutorily defined that land as being within the area that they may acquire. The federal issue comes up because the feds are not going to give any money to anybody unless they are sure that the state thinks it's okay. So your statute, again, would be the basic premise, the first piece of being able to get federal money for these purposes, either for acquisition or construction. And as I believe it was Commissioner Witte mentioned before, my understanding is that the problem was that South Slough would have been able to get, I believe it was $900,000 with which to acquire that little piece of land near the bridge and bury the interpretive center in cooperation with the Merchants Association. But NOAA would not consider that because South Slough did not and could not own the land that that building would stand on, because that land was currently outside of the area within which you had given permission to buy land. Does that answer your question, sir?
Thank you, Pat.
Oh, follow. I'd like to ask Mr. Yonker a question again. Is the tribe that you belong to the tribe that operates the casino in Coos Bay?
Yes, it does.
Has the tribe, you mentioned the fact that the tribe would like to do some education of the style of life that folks had before the estuary. Have you given any consideration to being the down payment for the federal government to come in instead of the state, instead of us coming up with any matching money at any time in the future?
I don't know. No, I can't speak for the finances or anything. All I was speaking for was that they're in favor of the moving of the line.
Yeah.
And I was telling you a dream that I had as a tribal member of plank houses and expanding the culture that way. And I would have to go back to the council.
Mm-hmm.
And my dream is to become a partner with them and doing things. And probably, my dream would be to be a financial partner in that. But I don't know that our council would go so far at this point. And because our casino doesn't generate the money that Spirit Mountain does.
Cam Perry, Susan Smith, and Paul Zanetta.
Owned by the Crafts.
Yes, inside. Looks the same. How do you know that looks the same as that? No, I know it's not.
Five people left to testify after this plan. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I apologize. I've gotten to the point where I need a pair of glasses to read and a pair of glasses to talk to people. My name is Cam Perry. I am a property owner and a business owner in the Charleston area. My property also falls within the boundaries of the proposed expansion of South Slough under Senate Bill 857. I'm very much in favor of the expansion of the proposed boundary for a number of reasons. One of the most important to our community being that the South Slough is able to do now some incredible work in salmon and Benjamin's crab research to help enhance and create a protection area that will support our commercial fisheries and our sport fisheries for generations to come. It's extremely important that to be able to continue that work and expand that work within the South Slough area. They've done some very impressive things. I had a chance to accompany Mr. Craig Young from the Marine Lab recently on an all-day trip around the South Slough area to see some of the research projects that they're doing to support the young salmonoid population and the Benjamin's crab population. And that's tremendously exciting to Charleston area from not only a research standpoint, but for our future economy, because it is so vital to our commercial fishing and our merchants and everyone within our area. There's also some incredible opportunity. We talked a little bit about ecotourism, and our good friend Mr. Griffith mentioned that the South Slough doesn't have a dictator mandate to attract tourism. Well, I would certainly hope that they wouldn't need one, because that is so important to our area also, because ecotourism is pretty amazing. It's a $145 billion industry in North America, and it's the most rapidly expanding part of tourism in the world. And right now, the way it stands, South Slough attracts about 20,000 visitors a year, and this is without any formal national marketing program of any kind, other than just their internet presence on a website and the educational programs that they do. The other thing that's of tremendous interest to those of us who are behind education strongly is the amount of dollars that South Slough is able to attract to educational programs which are offered to students in the Coos Bay area. It's tremendous to be able to get some of those federal dollars in. What's very important is that the federal government, as you all know, designates money in pools, some of it regional, some of it program specific. If that money does not go awarded to this area, then it goes to another area. That's our tax dollars that are going to New Jersey or the state of Washington or California instead of going to Oregon. Because of the South Slough's presence, we're able to attract a significant amount of that money from the federal government. And I think the possibility of eventually expanding that South Slough estuary sanctuary will only help enhance our ability to attract more federal dollars to our area. And that's a tremendous boon for all of us. The other thing that's very important to me as a property owner in the South Slough area is the fact that right now I have to discriminate on who I may or may not sell to. I can sell to a developer. I can sell to another private landowner. I can sell to virtually anyone, except I cannot sell to the South Slough sanctuary if it's in my heart to want my property to eventually go to that sanctuary. And I think that's a tremendous discrimination against private property owners. I think we need to correct that, because that's something that each of us is concerned about within the South Slough area. Overall, it's an incredible area. It has incredible potential for the future. That is important not just to those of us in Charleston, but everyone on the South Oregon coast. We have the opportunity to make an investment in our future that will cost virtually no dollars. That's incredibly attractive to all of us in the state of Oregon. And the potential that it has for the future and for future generations is amazing. That's why I urge you to support and vote for Senate Bill 857. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Perry. Susan?
My name is Susan Smith, and I live on 62295 Crown Point Road. I'm a property owner that is adjacent to the reserve as well. I'd just like my letter to be admitted as testimony, and I would like to finish saying that originally Senator Verger said this bill was a no-brainer, and it is. I support it.
Are you insinuating to this committee?
the beer of Little Green.
I thought about that before I said that.
Any questions for Mrs. Smith?
Should I stick my foot in my mouth?
Yes.
Yes. Mr. Vanetta?
Yes. My name is Paul Vanetta. I live at 90797 Sawali Lane, which is on the Crown Point Road area. I personally, as a homeowner within the proposed management boundary of the South Slough Estuary, I'm looking forward to this bill being passed by this committee and passed on to the full House for passage. This Bay Area economic engine that has had over 20,000 visitors each year complements other tourists with destinations and activities like the fishing, South Shore Acres, and Sunset Bay to the Charleston area. This legislation enhances the South Slough's ability to improve its research and sense of community. They are a good neighbor now and will be a better one with the passing of this legislation. I want to cover a couple of things that I don't think were totally covered in testimony. Number one, that they have to have a willing seller. They also have to have a willing buyer in this legislation. If the property is on the top of a mountain within this area that has no research value, that doesn't mean that the South Slough will buy it. They have to be, this has to be passed by legislation. Any purchase of property has to be go through the legislature. Also has to go through the management group of the South Slough. It isn't a, I think I'll go over the South Slough and sell this to Bill, to Mike Graybill. This bill does not allow that. And I think it has to be stressed. It has to be a willing seller, a willing buyer, with overview from the management group as well as the legislature. Thank you very much.
Any questions?
Yes,
Representative Greenlight.
You own land that's inside the current reserve boundary?
No, proposed management.
Proposed. Is all the land inside the current boundary owned now by the reserve? Is there?
No.
There is private land inside.
There's private land.
So there will end up being private land inside private and public land
right. Inside
the new boundary.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Representative Anderson?
From Overly Active today. I believe from directing the question at you that you indicated that you probably may not be able to sell your land, but it seems to me that Nature's Conservancy or other environmental groups might be very eager to buy your land.
Well, Representative Anderson, Mr. Chair, what I was alluding to was the fact that I would be unable, if I wanted to sell my land to the South Slough Sanctuary by law. I could not offer it to them for sale. The nice thing about 857 is it does not preclude private developers or private development of any of the waterfront lands, which I think a lot of people are concerned about. The other interesting thing is that when South Slough tries to purchase a piece of property, they can only use an existing evaluation of what that property is worth. In other words, a fair market value. A developer who would like to put in waterfront homes or condominiums could pay a great deal more for that property. Nothing would preclude that developer or other private buyer from purchasing that property if 857 passes.
Mm-hmm. But you're talking about your sale.
Oh, I was talking about my sale, that if I had ever wanted to sell my land to South Slough, I would be unable to sell to them. I'm restricted.
But you could sell for the same purpose.
Certainly could sell it to the Nature Conservancy or another, yes.
Any further questions?
Thank you, panel, very much.
Thank you very much.
Norma Vanetta and Rich Hamill.
You broke us up.
I know. Only because it's an odd number.
Right.
This is the final testimony committee opposed to the bill. And we have one more panel that will be sorry, these folks are full. Let's see. Norma?
My name is Norma Van Natta, and I live at 90797 Solali, Maine. We are within the proposed expanded boundary area of the South Slough. I'm in favor of Senate Bill 857 for a number of reasons, and I won't even begin to go into all of them because most of them have been discussed rather fully by other people in the neighborhood. One point that has not been brought up that I think might be of interest is if Senate Bill 857 is not passed, and if property is developed on the South Slough, as it currently stands, I believe the only type of development that would be permitted would be residential development. That would generate some property taxes. Property taxes which would not begin to cover the cost of community services that would be needed by any residential development that would be built there. It's been shown over and over again all across the United States that residential developments require anywhere from $1.25 to over $2 for every dollar generated by property taxes. That would be in order to cover police protection, fire protection, infrastructure building, and so forth. So members of the Charleston community, business community, would wind up supporting any residential property that would be developed in that area. So that's another reason that I support Senate Bill 857, because I believe that if property is purchased by the South Slough from willing sellers, it would develop more tax money through businesses in the Charleston community. Thank you.
Any questions from the committee? Seeing none, Mr. Hamill.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, my name is Rich Hamill. I live in Bandon, Oregon. I'm a member of the Friends of South Slough. In fact, I'm the treasurer at the present time. I'm also a member of the public representative member of the South Slough Management Commission. But today, I'm here to represent myself and my wife, who's with me in the audience. I have written testimony, so I won't belabor your time here, except to say one thing, that in no circumstance in my association with South Slough have I ever thought about South Slough acquiring all the land that's outlined in the boundaries that were shown up in Representative Roblin's amendment today. But I do think that there is a compelling need to have agreements with the property owners in the area. After all, in order for the reserve to serve its function as a natural science laboratory, it needs to be relatively pure, relatively pristine. And but the lands to the south and east, I guess south and west, that were talked about in that boundary are forest lands, and I don't see them as any serious threat, and I can't imagine that in any time in my lifetime or my children's lifetime there would be an approach to go out and trying to buy those lands. But there is also interest in keeping the estuary waters that get pumped up into the reserve relatively free of contaminants. And the closer the contaminant entrance point into the estuary waters north of the current boundary are, obviously, the more of those contaminants get pumped up into the estuary, and they discolor and discredit some of the research activities that are going on there. And it would be my interest to see that we attempt to buy from willing sellers not large pieces of land, but lands that border the estuary to minimize the possible entrance of contaminants. For one case, there was a dismention of a golf course as being an approach to develop the first area behind the water so that then the houses being built up behind the golf course would have a view of the waters. And of course we all know that a golf course uses chemicals of all types in order to maintain those beautiful green carpets that the golfers play on. And I think I'll stop at that and turn in my...
Any questions? Would you be in favor of a golf course in that area?
I'm in favor of the Bannon Dunes Golf Course, which all of us know about. I think it's a wonderful course, and I think it's done wonderful things for this area. But to have a golf course sitting just off of the mud flats, just north of the current boundary of the sanctuary, would be entirely inappropriate because the chemicals, it offers a prime opportunity for the fertilizers and the weed killers and so on and so forth to be pumped, drained directly into the estuary waters, which then gets pumped up into the reserve by tidal action.
So you're giving to me, sir, you're giving me an excellent reason to give the opponents of this bill, because you're saying right now, based on your opinion, you wouldn't let any kind of commercial development occur.
No, I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying that if there's a willing seller, and
no, let's say
we really have the money to buy that, if we could purchase a buffer of some kind to prevent contaminants from entering the estuary waters, that would be highly appropriate.
No, but what I'm saying, sir, is that the opponents to this bill are saying what will happen to them is exactly what you're saying will happen to them. You're saying that you will restrict what goes in there.
My understanding of this amendment that's before us is that nothing will change with regard to the authority or rulings available to the South Sioux Estuary, but that it would offer us an opportunity. It would offer the South Sioux Sanctuary to an opportunity to buy properties from a willing seller, and in which case then if they own the property, they could control what happens with that property.
Okay. Thank you. Any further questions? Thank you both.
Can I have a comment to Mr. Hammond's response?
Mm-hmm.
I think the confusion may be that you feel that the SLU would try to prevent someone from building a golf course if the South SLU doesn't own the property. And that, I believe, is not true. What Mr. Hamill is referring to is there has been in the past a willing seller of property that might be considered as a golf course if the South SLU couldn't buy it. But if the South Sioux could buy it, that would preclude the possibility of a golf course on that property if the South Sioux owned it. But if they didn't own it, they would have no ability to prevent someone from doing a golf course, for instance. We would hope that that would not happen.
Okay, I really don't want to belabor the point, but what I heard the gentleman say is that there would be chemicals running off the golf course into the estuary.
If a golf course were built.
Right. So what I'm saying is that you're telling me that the opponents are correct in their position that you would restrict the development further north.
I don't
know. No.
Around
no,
the boundary
no,
of the
estuary.
That's
not what we're saying.
Could I try again? It's my understanding that by moving the boundary clear out to the North Spit, if you wish, it would not change the authority of the South Sioux Reserve in any way, shape, or form. the reserve could not, the management commission could not restrict or in any way change anything that they aren't already capable of doing, if you want to put it that way. By moving the boundary doesn't affect that at all. All it does is it would allow us to purge. So if a golf course is going to go in, we couldn't do anything about it.
No,
yeah, but we could. But if we could, if the boundary were moved so that we could buy the property and the owner were willing to sell us the property, then we could purchase the property and choose not to put the golf course there.
Right. Okay. Thank you, Bill. Mm-hmm. Item 3, to give testimony are Patricia Coons, James Galton, and Dan Garosian. Patricia, would you like to start, please?
Thank you. My husband wanted very much to be here today, but because his health is so bad, he couldn't make the trip up here. So he asked me if I would bring this letter to you from him. It has to do with land acquisition. Hello, my name is Dieter Kuntz. In the very early 1970s, I purchased approximately 140 acres, which is now part of the South Slough Sanctuary, and this is what happened to me. About 2 years after I bought, I was contacted by a man from a state or federal office who wanted to buy my place. I told him it was not for sale. Then he threatened me with, "Okay, I will have it condemned and have you thrown off." I never saw him again after that day. Then came Ken Margolis from the Nature Conservancy, who wanted to buy my property. I told him the same thing. It is not for sale. So he started his badgering, and we finally came to an agreement that I would sell 100 acres with a 20-year lease, renewable annually at $1 a year, in exchange for the development rights on the remaining 40 acres. After only 1 year, the South Slough would not renew the lease, and they ordered me to remove all my buffalo, horses, and cows off the 100 acres because their droppings were contaminating the slough. I feel I was constantly harassed about what I could and could not do with my own property. When I finally could take no more, I reluctantly sold to them in 1988. No one would buy my place on the open market because of the restrictions the South Slough would put on them. I am convinced if the South Slough once gets their foot in your door, they will not let up, and eventually you will be badgered, harassed, and intimidated to sell to them. It happened to me, and I am sure they will continue that tactic. If you won't give in at the first, they will go on to the next owner of the next piece of land, badger him for a while, and then come back to you later. And on it goes until they get everyone out. It happened to me, and when I talked with my neighbors, they told me the same thing happened to them, until everyone is gone and the South Slough owns the whole thing. And now they are looking for more land and start the whole process over again. Thank you.
Jim Galton.
Jim?
Yeah.
You weren't signed up to speak?
James.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go right ahead, James.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Jim Galton. I'm a business operator. We have the Headlands Country Mercantile in Charleston. I've been in business there for 5 years. I'm on the board of directors for the Charleston Merchants Association, and I'm here in opposition to Bill, Senate Bill 857. What sounds warm and fuzzy is just a simple little move of a red line out into the area of Charleston. Carries with it CFR 921. That is the issue. Not this, that the SLU needs more land. This comes with it. And this has so many restrictions attached to it. As a matter of fact, one of the mandates of a SLU director is that he must aggressively acquire land. If he doesn't, he is sanctioned. It means fired or whatever they, but it says, yeah, that's in their sanction section. So they have a mandate to aggressively acquire land. We in the Merchants Association, this Gateway project that keeps being referenced is a dead issue. When the SLU or Senate Bill 857 came into the picture, the little county park on the Charleston side of the Charleston Bridge came off the table in the project development because one of the conditions set by the county was if the SLU moved their boundary out from Valeno Island to the bridge, the county property, which was in the project, was off the table. Okay. This project has been in It started 2 years ago. The merchants, thinking that this project was to take place inside the county park only, which is on the bayside of the Cape Argo Highway, was our understanding that we could maybe mutually put funds together and have a visitor center and an interpreter center, visitor center for the SLU and merchants combined on the county property. But once this went into a feasibility study, it was determined, primarily by the SLU, that that wasn't an adequate piece of property, and the private property on the SLU side of the highway was more in would suit their needs. Okay, the merchants were not kept informed. The merchants board, for a year and a half, was given no knowledge of what was transpiring with the select committee that met with the SLU. Merchants Board of Charleston, in violation of their charter, was given no knowledge of what was transpiring, and only days before the grant had to be submitted to acquire the private property on the SLU side of the road was any information given to the merchants. In other words, the Merchants Association was totally uninformed as to what was the progress. Shortly after the submission for the grant, Senate Bill 857 came into the picture. It was not in the picture in the development of the combined involvement with the SLU. 857 changes the entire picture of what the merchants see as the future for Charleston. 857 brings CFR 921 with it. This has the potential, has anyone read, this is not pleasure reading.
I'm sure most of us probably don't even know what you're referring to.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. CFR 921 is the National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration directives as how a SLU is supposed to manage itself and run. Okay. It gives the stipulations on what the controls. Basically, once the SLU has land in their reserve, and a watershed which takes it to the highest point of the surrounding land in every direction. And in addition to that, it gives them a buffer zone for administration because of what it might do or the effects it might have on... Okay, now what does all that mean for the merchants of Charleston and the greater Charleston area? It means that they have powers far beyond DEQ. Okay, and they have conditions that they can bring on landowners and enterprises that nobody else can bring. I've been very frustrated for 2 years trying to get it to do business or deal with the SLU. As a matter of fact,
Mr. Raymond, do you have a complete copy of the CFR there?
We have sent each member a copy of this.
It was distributed.
So some member, apparently the committee just received that today.
No, this was mailed in sometime ago.
That doesn't mean it wasn't mailed in
my hands.
If you can begin to wrap up, sir.
I'm sorry?
If you can begin to wrap up your testimony, please.
Okay. I guess what I'm trying to say is the Merchants Association is really, as a matter of fact, I personally am going to bring up a vote to disengage all activities with the South SLU in a general vote of our board because of the way we have found that they have dealt with land tenants on their current reserve, and we do not want that to continue into in any way our community if the boundaries were to move. I don't want my name attached to any of these practices that the SLU. We will continue to get testimony from people who are being harassed at this time. Written testimony and signature. This is happening right now. The SLU has purchased everything open to them in the current reserve. The reason they want to have a boundary move is so that they can continue to aggressively acquire land. If you can't do education and research on 4,700 acres of land, then I don't know why tripling that is going to do any better. We could do it on 50 acres. They have access to all the inland waterways under DSL to do any kind of research they want. They don't need the land. What we need the land for, there's one other thing in what was just handed out, is a 1999 map of what the future plans the SLU had for the SLU area. And it's to take the boundary out past the bridge, into the bay, and out the channel. And one of the mandates in CFR 921 is for the SLU to combine with and cooperate and work with the maritime sanctuaries. In other words, the water outside of Charleston, the water inside the bay, is then locked up with additional harmful, unnecessary rules and regulations that can kill Coos Bay. Coos Bay is the poorest county in the United States. Since 1985, 10 schools have closed. This area is in dire need of family wage jobs. We have lost our young families in Coos Bay because of lack of opportunity. And if the SLU is able to get into the bay with their reserve, as their reserve boundary gets into the bay, they can literally take the entire bay and lock it up to anything that quote-unquote might damage the sensitive ecology of the bay. We have people in Coos Bay They voted to get the pipeline in. They want to pull themselves up by the bootstraps and develop an economy that supports the schools and supports families. I'm going to tell you right now, this is a move that SLU has been wanting to make into the Bay. Once they're into the Bay,
you're going to have to begin to wrap up, sir.
Okay.
I've given you almost twice as much time as anyone else.
There's more to say. I have talked to Soss Brothers, Knudsen. I've talked to Coosehead Lumber. If we had more time, I could get testimony from every major concern on the Bay that would be against this move.
That's what this hearing was all about, sir.
We haven't had time. We have had 1 week. This has been on fast track passing through legislature. We have had very little time to respond to this. And if we had more time, we would have massive accounts of people who are from all the major companies in the Coos Bay area.
Okay, thank you. Any questions? Thank you, sir, very much. Mm-hmm. And,
Daniel Lauzon.
I did pronounce it right, then.
Yeah, you're pretty close. Good afternoon. My name is Daniel Lauzon, and I live in North Bend, Oregon. I'm a consultant, does research work on estuaries in part, also seabirds and oil spills. I did submit written testimony, but I am also an elected official, so I'm going to invoke the precedent set that I can also at least give you a short review of what I've presented in writing.
I'm sorry, when you signed up, you didn't indicate you were an elected official.
No, I didn't. I didn't even see the place to write that down. It's what a minor position.
What position do you have?
The Coos Soil and Water Conservation Board.
Okay.
I guess the thing that I'd like to emphasize, first I'd like to say it's kind of unfortunate that the Gateway Project got included into this bill, because I've been actually an advocate for various ways we can increase tourism in our area, and having a SLU have some sort of presence in Charleston along with the merchants would have been, I thought, a good thing, as long as it didn't in any way allow NOAA to establish a foothold in Charleston. That I object to, so that I'm against that portion of 857. The thing I'd like to stress is that this place is a research reserve. It's not there for ecotourism. It's not there for many of the things I've read today, for a view from your house, or being able to sell it to the reserve, all those things. It's a research reserve. And I happened, as a board member of the National Estuarine Research Federation 20-some-odd years ago, I was lucky enough to be involved in some of the early discussions when these things were being formed throughout the nation. And the intent of most of those scientists on that board was we needed an area where you could buy a fairly large chunk of property, one that would allow you to do some pretty large-scale restoration efforts, and then establish baseline data by monitoring a healthy SLU, a healthy estuary. But there's another component to it, and it's sort of been that word you've heard thrown around today, stewardship. It wasn't called that then. And that, if you look up stewardship, it means the use of resources, the prudent use of resources. And what some of us envisioned was that once we had baseline data on a healthy estuary, we'd be able to manipulate the habitat and maybe answer some of these questions about whether or not a housing development is going to cause the water chemistry of South Slough to change. Or is clear-cutting really that horrible thing you hear about all the time, given the new buffers that we set up? I mean, I have answers to those questions, but I'm going to bore you with that today. But to the credit of the folks working at the estuary, when I was here 20 years ago, first starting to work in this area, that place was not living up to the potential that it could have lived up to as a set-up reserve. But to the credit of Mike Graybill and his staff, over 20 years, they've done incredible things in building that place up out there. Now it's just time to do the next step. And I was part of the committee that set up the the acquisition plan, which they may have not submitted to you. But that, I called up some of those committee members to refresh my memory. In a few days, I'm going to be 60 years old. I'm not really trusting my memory that much anymore. But the clear intent of those folks was, yeah, we want you to buy more property, but essentially buy up those parts you don't own inside your administrative boundary and maybe tack on stuff that abuts to it. We didn't envision them moving out into the bay, up South Sea to the bridge or up Coos Bay. But that was then. Some of those members on the committee I didn't get to reach, they may have changed their minds. But attached to the back of this is a letter from the Friends of New and Sustainable Industries in Coos Bay. That's the group that was formed in part by Arnie Robben, our representative, who saw that we needed to bring new and sustainable industry into our area. We brought the gas line. We were chiefly responsible for getting the gas line in, the new airport district, and a couple other smaller projects. I'm a board member on that group. And the other day, after a lengthy discussion, we voted unanimously against this. There is not broad community support for this. The Coos Soil and Water Conservation Board I sit on voted, after lengthy discussion, unanimously against it. And I work with port officials as well and port dock owners. And just anecdotally, I support what he said. Sauceboat, most of the major industries in the bay are not going to be in support of this. One other issue I wanted to raise was the concept of a willing seller. That's been brought up several times today. I have spent 25 years working with willing sellers. And, once these people get over the hurdles of an incongruous set of regulations from the state and the feds, they're oftentimes today confronted with private groups of no-growth environmentalists. Now, I'm not saying that that's exactly what these people are, but if we'd been some of those meetings where they were talking about the zoning, I think they would fit that particular category. And, they'll throw anything on the wall to see if it'll stick in terms of degradation of sloughs, water quality, because the guy might put a golf course out there. Well, there's 100-foot buffers that have been established on this thing. Let's see if it does. That's my question. That's what the reserve is there for, in my opinion. The other aspect of this is, after they get hammered in these public meetings, most people, they'll be a willing seller. If they want to sell the property they already own in that area and they want to keep it as it is, then fine, sell it to the Nature Conservancy. But the SLU doesn't need the land to increase its research capabilities, in my opinion. And it will open up a whole new box of federal regulations if it's in fact is sold into that system. A system I support, by the way. I mean, the argument, too, that they don't represent all of the estuarine elements in the bioregion they're in, that's the true all over the nation. And there they don't let them checkerboard buy pieces of property to make up for that problem. They just put in another research reserve. So if you want to cover more of the elements in our bioregion, let's put one in Tillamook. Well, let's put one in Newport. What do you think the odds of that are, buying 5,700 acres or 4,700 acres in Newport? But when this was established, it was known that if you were going to sell it to the local communities, you had to get a big enough piece of property where you could get the work done. But to sell it to those communities, you had to show them that this was not going to have an enormous impact on the community in terms of economics. It would be hard to buy 5,000 acres of land in a place like Newport today, is what I'm saying. So it just doesn't quite jive. And then the last little bit I'd like to mention is about the economics of it, because I've heard a lot about ecotourism today. I have spent, again, through other development associations, trying to get tourism built up in Coos Bay. I was actually back in the mid-80s trying to establish an oceanarium in our area before the Newport Aquarium went in. We had studies done by the U of O. It never penciled out. We could get the money to build it from private donations, but we couldn't maintain it. And guess what's happening to Lloyd and Coastal Aquarium today? It's already starting to talk about getting some state subsidies. It can't make it. And it's just a reality, especially where we are. We're even farther from Salem than Portland. We've never been able to get tourism in any form to pencil out as a way to really answer the needs that we have economically in our area. And then the last point I'd like to make is, what we do have is the only deep water port north of San Francisco in the Pacific Northwest. And we want heavy industry and commercial activity on that bay again, because we know that that's what's going to provide the jobs and the money to keep our schools open, to get the housing that we need. That's the aspect here that's not mentioned. They say, well, you know, you need to use the tax bases, but it doesn't really do anything for the schools. Well, what you need for the schools, we got to have kids. We have families moving out. There are no children coming in anymore to speak of. And so, we're losing dollars for that reason. Well, these companies, we've got three or four right now, one under construction, two under planning. That are about to, and the first thing they ask is, what about housing for middle and higher middle income employees we're going to have, and the health care system? So anyway, that's what I'm worried. I don't want to take any more land that's capable of putting rooms on it out of that possibility. Thank you.
Any questions? You should be happy sometimes that you're a distance from Salem and Portland. Thank you very much for your testimony. Our committee, that concludes the testimony of the 18 individuals who testified both for this bill and opposing this bill. And goodness knows, my file now is almost as full as my Measure 37 file. So we have a lot of material to take a look at. But I would like to personally thank each and every one of you, the citizens of Coos County, who came here today to participate in this process. You're to be congratulated. And as legislators, we thank you. And committee, I will close the public hearing on House on Senate Bill 857A. Seeing that pretty much we've gone almost 3 hours, I think we'll set Senate Bill 91A and Senate Bill 92 off to another day, so we will be adjourned.